TNT Radio wants you to get on our soapbox because your opinion matters. Tell us what you really think at tntradio.live. Upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's soapbox, lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. Using science to debunk myths, from the pandemic to climate fraud. Thanks for listening to Sky Dragon Slaying on TNT Radio.
Hi, welcome back to the show, where we have Dr. Michelle Perrault talking about all things to do with GMOs and the vaccines and so forth. In the first hour of the show, we went over a lot of depressing news that we had to cover. In the second hour, we're going to try and focus on a bit more good news. And Michelle, you've got good news for us from Africa. You've got stuff there from the Center for Biodiversity about taking on Monsanto and Bayer.
I love it. Yeah, we were, you know, during the news break, we were listening a bit about Africa. We mentioned it briefly prior in the previous hour that indeed Africa, gosh, doing really well during COVID. Haiti, I think the poorest country in the world, doing very well with COVID. African Center for Biodiversity is taking on Monsanto Bayer for GM maize, so that's GMO corn. And I just think like this is brilliant because let the African continent, figure out how to take care of themselves. And they are so pro agrodiversity, regenerative farming, pro farming, with exception of a few countries like South Africa and perhaps Nigeria and a few others. So maybe Egypt as well. So I'm just saying, right on. Let's do a shout out to, you know, what's happening there in the African Center for Biodiversity. I follow them, and I think they do really good work in support of their communities. So that's one bit of good news. Right on.
Yeah, it's good to know. Our colleague on TNT Radio, Jeremy Now, who does germ warfare, and he kind of makes a joke of it, the fact that South Africa is pretty much like a failed state. And government diktat hasn't really worked about the vaccine mandates. And he's quite proud of that. He jokes about it. And it's true, isn't it? Those governments that don't really have control over the citizens just haven't been able to push through the mandates. And it's great to see. And, you know, there could be an argument here that it's kind of a leveling up of the third world, leveling up to the first world. First world ideas of belief in authority, belief in the structure of the state. You know, perhaps being a little bit too complicit with the left, you know, going along with social remedies. In the NHS in the UK, we've got the NHS telling us what to do and people go along with it. I remember during lockdown, we had the clapping once a week on a Thursday evening. We were told to go to our front doors at 8 o'clock and clap, applaud the NHS. And it was just it's a travesty of any kind of sensibility in terms of what you know is going on. You know, I know we're speaking to the converted here. We know that TNT listeners are very much the awakened ones. But we have to keep pushing on this issue. And Joe Olson, have you got anything to add on the Africa situation?
Oh, yes. Well, go back to my article posted at Principia Scientific. On August 3rd, 2020, we flew bats to news for you. And this has the history on hydroxychloroquine, which had been used by Native Americans for 1,000 years before Columbus got here, was used in Europe for 500 years after that. I saw a fanciful history of it at a Catholic website that said in 1700, some Jesuit friar was walking through the jungle, got malaria, fell down underneath a tree. Some rainwater dripped off the tree. It was a chinoa tree. It cured him. And so he's the one that discovered quinine. Actually not. It's an alkaloid. It's a family of organic chemicals that are produced by plants to protect themselves from viruses, fungus, molds, predators, a whole range of things. And it's a whole range of organic compounds. And quinine was stabilized by Bayer Company in 1935 as chloroquine, and then further refined as a more, even more stable product as hydroxychloroquine. It's over the counter in all of Latin America, all of Africa, and all of Indonesia. So you wonder why they were healthy? They do it. They call it the Sunday pill. They take one every Sunday. You metabolize a whatever dosage size it is, I forget which one I've been taking for 2 years, but you metabolize that over about a 3-week period. I got my prescription from Stella Emanuel, one of the frontline doctors that was protesting in front of the Supreme Court for medical freedom. But anyhow, yeah, it's an absolutely wonder drug, off-label use for arthritis, lupus, chronic fatigue syndrome, on and on and on. And the same thing with ivermectin. These are the things that could have prevented this from happening. And if you have therapies, you do not have an excuse for an emergency use authorization. So that was criminal to begin with. But there's another person that has some really good information. The thing that we can be happy about is that we are informing ourselves. And like we've said many times before, John, every epiphany is permanent. Saw a great, about a 15-minute long video by Catherine Watt on Rumble. And the title of it is, "You Are in a Military Exercise to Kill You Off." And some interesting things that I've also been searching on. The human genome was decoded in 2003. Immediately, they set about to find out what could be the most deadly pathogen. Well, let's dig up the 1918 Spanish flu. So they managed to get the genome for the Spanish flu, H1N1, in 2005, and they went, aha, now we've got the most deadly bioweapon in the world. And then they found out that it had happened in 1890, it had happened in 1957, it happened in 1968. It's like it repeats itself about every 15, 20 years, because that's how long it takes for the natural immunity of the population to be overcome. And so bottom line is, what they thought was going to be a miracle bioweapon turns out to be just a flu that is very, very common. And there's 18 varieties of H as far as the H1 through, and then there's 11 varieties of the N as far as the N1 portion of it. But bottom line is, they got the CRISPR technology in 2012 so that they could do gene editing and splice in things. And lo and behold, we have epidemics where there's swine flu that has European and Asian swines, which they wouldn't intermingle. We have bird flus that have European and Canadian geese, where they do not ever have any ability to intermingle. And so the things that we had the SARS in 2003, which looked like bioweapon, MERS, the swine flu, which was an H1N1 in 2009. So bottom line is, we've been ruled by some pretty evil people. But also on that SGT report that we were mentioning earlier with Todd Callender, they said that they have Russia has started their war crimes trials in Ukraine based on all the evidence that they got from the 42 labs that were bioweapons labs in Ukraine, as well as the human organ harvesting and child trafficking. And so they're doing those trials, and I expect them to be public, and that's going to be something that the UN's going to have a real hard time ignoring, and that maybe the people in EU and the people in NATO are going to say, we're done with this stuff. So, you know, all we can do is hope that there's enough of humanity to rise up at once, because the people that are controlling us, another great book by John Coleman, is the 300 Committee, the Committee of 300. And this is the people that are actually pulling the strings. And it's a very small group of people that, once we manage to wrestle power away from them, we've got plenty of energy, we've got plenty of knowledge, we've got plenty of goodwill to turn Earth into an Eden overnight, if we can just get these people away from the levers of power.
Yes, well said, Joe. We've had 3 years of this, basically an IQ test, hasn't it? Been like an IQ test. It's an experiment into how we can think for ourselves and not be dependent on politicians. And Michelle, it's a great advert for what you're arguing for. I mean, the fact that Africa is actually the control group, if you like. The fact that we can say about Africa that it's got more sunshine, people tend to walk more, you know, the population is not as obese as Western society, you know, generally speaking, not reliant on processed food as much. And again, not following government diktat. And we have somebody called Christian Happy, the director of the African Center of Excellence for Genomics of Infectious Disease at Redeemer's University, Nigeria. He goes along with this. He says that the authorities have failed to impose vaccines mandates, and people have just stuck to what they normally do. And a big part of that is not listening to the propaganda, not becoming afraid, not getting drawn into hysteria. And it's refreshing to see that. And I think that this is the way forward, isn't it? Where we have to kind of take a leaf out of the African way of doing things and not rely on government so much. What would you say to that, Michelle?
I'd say you're spot on. Thank you both, Joe. What you said is very thoughtful. John, the idea of self-reliance is what we're promoting. I think Africans, many Africans, have been self-reliant because they haven't had access to a lot of government programs like we've had, or, you know, government funding, government programs like, you know, food stamps and Medicare, Medi-Cal and other things. So I think there is increased self-reliance, and that's what we're trying to reteach, you know, those of us of first world, so to speak. And I think you're right on that. And indeed, we're going to see this massive switch. The control group is going to rise. And I suspect that will happen in other areas that are similar to what's happened in African countries. So, and this is what, but you just can't become self-reliant. We're trying to teach it. And there are so many blocks to cure. And that's a homeo- was something I steal from homeopathy, because you get your news on Google. No, I don't think so. You know, obfuscation of truth on the media, obfuscation of truth, the medical system, obfuscation of truth. So you have to really become a CSI agent, every family member, to find truth for yourself and dig out, you know, radio programs like this, or, you know, websites like we have, which is not so easy, but we keep trying to get them out there. And one of the ways we do it, and that's why I love this invitation, thank you for having me, is via networking. What we do have, we may not have deep pockets, but what we have is heart, spirit, passion, and the ability to network and the desire for truth. So we keep growing our communities, our tentacles, you know, without the subterfuge, in full disclosure, full transparency, full authenticity. And that's how we're going to succeed. And I think like people like Vandana Shiva does it. You know, and look what she's promoting and what she's written on, and, you know, Navdayana, the program in India. And that's what I'm hoping, that we can recreate this return to where we were, you know, not better living through chemistry or engineered chemistry, I should say, but getting back to the land. I feel like a Joni Mitchell song, but that's indeed what we need to do. And we have to educate and help people how to do it. We've got a major problem, and our young people are addicted to the screens. So they think they're going to find the answers looking at this screen. And for those of us who know a bit better, know that that's not true. They have a significant dopamine release every time they go on these programs, not to mention whatever the government program is doing via your computer, your iPhone, or whatever device you're on. Some young people are on like three or four devices at once. So this is our challenge, is to kind of get people's hands dirty, back to soil, back to their roots. That's all we're trying to do. It's pretty clear and very simple, and it's doable. It's doable.
And I like thank you. And I like what you do on Regeneration Health International, your website, rhi.bio, where you do a wonderful section where you talk about how to read scientific studies. And you know, I've looked at that, and you've got some wonderful tips. And I do recommend that. I do recommend listeners go to www.rhi.bio to pick up on your, you know, very sound advice, where you're suggesting that we need to be aware of certain key issues when we get information from these sources, media sources. You know, first of all, look at conflict of interest. You're making the point there, you know, that bias is a fact in studies. The peer-reviewed journals, we found that with Principia Scientific International, so much scientific information is biased. And again, it's not a case of follow the science so much as follow the money. And I think that you've written well on that. Do you want to just give our listeners a bit more insight on that?
Absolutely. Thank you for highlighting that. And I feel that everyone needs to become their own critical thinker and their own scientist. And it really behooves everyone to know how to read a basic scientific study and what constitutes a good scientific study. And there is a model. I'm not saying it's followed in science, but there is a model on how you can take two groups. One's the control group, one's the experimental group. And what we do is, this is called placebo control. We blind the researchers, so we try and remove bias. That's called the removal of bias. So we have a double-blinded, placebo-controlled clinical trial you want to have the number of subjects high enough so that it has statistical power. So you don't want to just have two people in your study. Maybe you need 40 or 80 to create a power in your study. Small numbers may suggest something, but not statistically significant. And those are the words we use. And the study design. And then, of course, there's the peer review process where you have peers in who are knowledgeable in your area. So, and they look at your work and decide what's good and what's not. And because the study doesn't come out the way you think it should have, you can address that. Well, one of the key questions for any scientific study is who is funding the study? And if it's funded by a pharmaceutical agent, 70 some odd percent of those studies will come out in favor of the pharmaceutical product or whatever that's being studied. So this is, and sometimes it's really hard to find who funded it. So these are the things we need to look at. And what we hope to do in RHI and other, and GMO Science does it as well, is break down science, particularly the difficult studies. We're not all Joe Olson here who can really like get into the science, is break it down in legible terms that everyone can understand, because not everyone has a background in genetics and ecology. And so that's one of the things we're trying to do. And we've been trying to do it at GMO Science for like 8 years now to do just that. Is how we interpret the science. Remember, the New England Journal of Medicine, one of the cornerstone journals of medicine, their key editor left after 20 years, ballpark, Dr. Marcia Engel, because of corruption. And she wrote a book about it, actually. You can find her book. So we have to appreciate that even these pillar journals, like the New England Journal of Medicine, have corruption as a problem. And boy, we saw it when the Moderna vaccine was just released with that nonsense in The Lancet a couple of years ago. So thank you for pointing that out. That paper took me a long time to write to try and break it down and make it simple, but that was a good exercise for me as well. If I can't make terms simplified, then I don't understand it.
Right. Michelle Perra, we're going to take a short break now. This is Sky Dragon Slaying TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Steve Hook.
There's going to be a video released. Everybody's a little bit worried about this because this is the video of Tyre Nichols getting beaten to death by five police officers in Memphis. And, well, he didn't die on the scene, but he died 3 days later. All of the officers involved were black police officers. Tyre Nichols was a black young man, about 29 years old. The country is on a kind of on a knife's edge here as we wait for this body cam footage to be released. And here's hoping that cooler heads prevail and that we genuinely see peaceful protest as opposed to rioting. I know in the city of Atlanta, Governor Brian Kemp has already called out the National Guard just to be on standby and to be in place. I hear in Memphis that they've got police basically all over the city, some undercover, some on horseback. And we all just wait and see what happens. And, well, like I said, hopefully cooler heads will prevail.
Steve Hook on today's News Talk, TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation donated more than $310 million to mainstream media. We don't tell the story that Bill Gates wants you to know. We tell the real story. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hi, welcome back. We've got Dr. Michelle Perra with her. She's listed in as America's top 10 pediatricians. We've not talked about children's health. Let's go a bit into that area, Michelle, with you. What I'd like to discuss with you is generally vaccines. I mean, people are now questioning all vaccines after the COVID scare. You know, what would you recommend to families now who feel under pressure? You know, we know that some parents have been told they can't have their children in school unless they're vaccinated. It's a dilemma, isn't it, for families? And what's your experience on this issue?
You know, I've done some really deep dive on this because this has really shaken my world as well. I just, you know, and I've had to look hard, you know, at what we've done. What I find interesting about vaccines, I don't believe that the principle is bad, but the pharmaceutical companies have been allowed to do with them is bad. So the idea is very homeopathic in nature. You could take a small dose of what you're trying to treat and give it to someone to stimulate immune response. So I love the idea of vaccination. However, it went sideways, particularly here in 1986 in the U.S. when we passed legislation. I believe Ronald Reagan was our president at the time, that where, you know, vaccine companies got indemnity, right? So they could not be sued for their product, and they no longer created a decent product, and it just went all downhill. So I don't believe I can trust vaccines any further. They've been corrupted. The adjuvants, which are the chemicals that are they put in to make the injections more immunologically stimulating, the majority of them are toxic, and they're contaminated with viruses. And, you know, Dr. Hillebrand himself, who worked for Merck, who I think was responsible for the development of 36 different vaccines announced in 2015, the problem with vaccines is, and he said himself in a video that's not available on YouTube anymore, is they cause cancer. So my faith in this therapeutic modality for anyone is zero, absolutely zero. And I've done hard research looking at this. I hate the term anti-vax. I am pro-child. So even if we did a therapy for 100 years since Jenner himself, and it's no longer serving our children, get rid of it. Let's exercise a modicum of common sense, shall we? So I would have to say that's my opinion now. They need to be put on hold, all of them, yes.
Yeah, and I think we formed the opinion here that it seems that adjuvants have actually become what the vaccines are actually about. You know, yeah, there's this idea that the virus is supposed to come in a small amount and give you the immune response. But it seems like what they're actually doing now, the point is the adjuvant. You know, like you said, with the schedule in California, 72 vaccines that are all coming with the adjuvants. It seems like it's the adjuvants that they're actually trying to give you nowadays. What do you think? And as you said, these adjuvants are toxic. So it seems like that's the point of the vaccines today. What do you think?
I think that's true. The fact that we're using, if there's about a list of probably about maybe 13 or 15 ingredients per vaccine. If you look at just aluminum, there's a few that still have thimerosal, mercury, but the majority of them have aluminum, and now there's nanoaluminum. Aluminum is a neurotoxin. And so how we can be injecting small children who have impaired detoxification or immature detoxification pathways is just absolutely horrific. Why we allow this to happen is unclear to me. I just can't wrap around this. And we cannot clear that. And we're not eating the aluminum where you have a chance to get rid of it through your gut. We're injecting it directly in the bloodstream, directly across the blood-brain barrier. So they have to be halted because our kids cannot tolerate the toxic load. What's making our kids sick are environmental toxicants, including heavy metals, vitamin vaccines, air pollution, contaminated water, contaminated food. That's what's making our kids sick. So every single thing has to be addressed, including injecting.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I would say, yeah, you just said it's not clear what the purpose of doing all that was. I would say that, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's not clear unless, you know, aside from a purpose to sicken us all, like basically.
Well, it's a profiteering, patents, you know, it's patent parade, in my opinion. And, you know, indeed, some of the childhood viruses, some of them have killed children, or have nasty side effects. Like if you look at measles, for example, big measles scare. Yes, there are some nasty side effects from measles, no doubt. And 1 in a million children could develop this encephalitis. 1 in a million. We're looking at 1 in 30 kids on the spectrum now. So you like, really? Yes. So kids have had serious adverse effects from certain viruses, but it's a small number when you compare the kids who've been harmed from what we've done from these vaccine series. And there's no doubt in my mind that they all need to be held. And the unfortunate thing is they're on school schedules. And I tell parents, you will have to homeschool. And two parents are working. Well, gee, easy for me to say. You know, parents are in an awful dilemma right now. Hard. And so there are, I think, conferences happening right now, teaching parents how to band together who are working full-time, the whole deal, on how to homeschool their children. You know, look at Ansel Adams. He was homeschooled. No, so, you know, not to be, glib here, but I really have an issue on what we've done to our children's health. When I wrote that first book, 54% of American children had a chronic disease. And now, anecdotally, it's probably up to 63%. That's more than half of our children are sick with
a chronic disease. Isn't that
high? It's a massive. It's massive. Absurd. It's absolutely unacceptable. Kids are not born with an absence of vaccinations. So we have to adjust their policy ASAP. It's not going to happen because of that control and that cozy relationship between pharma and the government. So this is why I'm advising parents to figure out how to get out of the system.
Yeah, just sure. I'll add to that point, Joe Olson, you just sent us an email on the CDC. CDC's what it means to have an exemption. What is it? And can you explain some of that for us?
Oh, yeah, it's virtually impossible to get an exemption, but they also monitor the doctor's insurance records. And if you have a compliance ratio of less than 75% at 100% of the CDC schedule in your practice, the pharmaceutical companies come by and start really leaning on you. The insurance companies start really leaning on you. And then they start offering you bonuses for reaching the 75 or 80% threshold of full vaccination, which is absolutely absurd. A great article that I wrote, read by Lee Habib, H-I-E-B, at WorldNet Daily back in 2015, how vaccine hysteria could spark a totalitarian nightmare. Man, how prophetic. I mean, here's this lady 8 years ago, head of the AAPS, American Association of Physicians and Surgeons. And in her article, which is really lengthy and I can't pull it up and pull all the bullet points out, she mentions that they had a lot of autism in Japan, and they removed the vaccine schedule to age 2, and it completely went away. They had sudden infant death syndrome. They were ranked 17th in highest infant mortality worldwide. It went to the last in the planet as far as that. And then they also had 100% vaccination rates down in Australia when they had an outbreak of whooping cough and another outbreak of measles in populations of students that were 100% vaccinated. So you got to wonder if the vaccines are really doing any good. So I highly recommend that article, and we probably ought to put it, I think we may have posted it a year or two ago at PSI, but we ought to post it again. It's how vaccine hysteria could spark a totalitarian nightmare. Really a great article.
Yeah, and on that vein, I'd like to mention the fact that we posted an article on the 3rd of February, public health authorities sacrificing our children on the vaccine altar. That's at principia-scientific.com. You know, we're on this case, and we support the work of Robert Kennedy Jr., who does amazing work with the Children's Health League. And, you know, I'd like to mention the fact that, you know, there's something going on here in that it's pretty clear. I mean, it's anecdotal, but I noticed the rise of, I mean, my background being a school teacher, I spent 20 years teaching, and we always get updates on the kids in our class with autism and so forth, and it's just gone through the roof. You know, I started teaching in the mid-1980s. Very rarely would you see issues raised of children in a class with autism, and I kind of stopped teaching about 5 or 6 years ago. And, you know, but by that time, it was like endemic. You know, you were having issues with autism everywhere. You know, and Michelle, you probably would go along with that, wouldn't you?
Not only that, you know, I have to bring 2 points to that. I would absolutely go along with that. And in schools, and I, when I was visiting Australia in about 2015, every school that we visited had on their boards of all the kids with food allergies and who needed EpiPens, the treatment for severe food allergies, listed with a like long list of kids. So schools have become like adjunct medical centers because they now have to give so many treatments, so many kids lining up for drugs, list of kids with potential allergies, list of kids who need to come in for their inhalers or their asthma and what have you. Because in the US, we've got like 1 in 6, 1 in 8, 1 in 10 kids with asthma. It's another epidemic. So the landscape has changed. And all pharma does is make more money because these kids are on chronic drugs forever. Mm-hmm. One other side point I want to talk about, another thing that just snuck in last week, is this coding, this insurance coding, it's called ICD-10. Now they want we physicians to put down if you've been unvaccinated and code for that. They want to track the unvaccinated status of people, which is none of their freaking business. They have no, there shouldn't be an unvaxxed code. That's not an abnormal state to be unvaccinated. So they're trying to create this state that if you are unvaccinated, that's an abnormal thing. As a matter of fact, my dear friend and colleague, Dr. Paul Thomas, produced an excellent paper out of his practice with almost 3,000 kids out of his practice, I think 2,900. And it showed kids who were breastfed and unvaccinated were healthiest. And so, so this idea that you're healthy if you're vaccinated is not true. The unvaccinated kids do better. So, you know, this, I support, and you ask any teacher now, anecdotally and statistically, the classroom now is a series of IEPs, kids who need special education, special learning. And when my own kids were small, it was, I think half the class had special needs. And even my own kids now, and they're grown up now. I can't even imagine what it's like being a school teacher now.
Yeah, yeah. And I'd like to chuck into the mix that there was a work by Neil Z. Miller of the Institute of Medical and Scientific Inquiry in Santa Fe, New Mexico. You know, he's telling us to look out for the chicanery with the VAR system. And he wrote a paper, Vaccines and Sudden Infant Death, an Analysis of the VAR's Database, 1990 to 2019. And review of the medical literature. And he called it an eye-opener, because what he found is that there's a massive cover-up of on the VAR's database of the amount of injuries. And and not only that, it's the media are complicit in it as well, because there's no real journalism on this issue, is there? You know, that there's so much poisoning of our young, and as you say, that the side effects, you know, autism is the obvious thing that we see, but as you say, allergies are endemic. I mean, I forever seeing children with inhalers, you know, asthma inhalers. Again, it's I just can't relate to that. You know, as a 20-year school teacher, 20-year career in school teaching, I was shocked how, you know, over time that became more and more of a problem in a so-called developed nation like the UK, where we've had first world healthcare. And yet our children are getting sicker.
I mean, this, I can rattle off statistics regarding, you know, rates of illness now in children. It's all frightening and horrific. The one of the worst ones I'll share with you now is regarding mental health. And, you know, we in Western medicine, we view mental health as a separate thing from the rest of the body, as if it's not biologically connected. That this COVID has done horrific harm to young people, with rates of anxiety, depression skyrocketing. Before, 50% of teenagers were diagnosed with anxiety, depression. I would suspect it has doubled because of COVID lockdowns, masking, social isolation. These are all horrific tools, ineffective, useless tools that we imposed on our children, with now dire health consequences. So now we've created another health disaster. And not only we create another disaster, we don't have the medical facilities and mental health professionals to assist these kids. So here's the problem: not enough people to support them, parents at a wit's end on what to do with their kids. So it's just like we have created endless horror for our kids. And so I believe from my heart of hearts that I'll speak for America, but I believe it's global. We don't love our children. There's a global assault on our children. And I think I said on the last show, I wrote a global environmental health bill of rights for kids. I think we've done a lousy job protecting our children, and we need to have, they need to have their own environmental health bill of rights, where we have a global response to protect our kids. And if that is violated, that it's a criminal activity, because I think that it's clear to me that they are under assault from every which way.
Well said. And going back to the article I referred to, Principia Scientific, the evidence is clear. You know, between 1990 and 2019, 2,605 infant deaths were reported on the VAR system, 78.3% of these deaths within 1 week of vaccination. Again, if that isn't a high area of news for journalism, you know, you don't know what is really, because that, if you're doing proper journalism, that should be reported. And you have to you come to places like TNT Radio with the so-called tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorists. You know, only a place like TNT Radio would dare report on that. You don't get that on the BBC, CNN or elsewhere. You know, it's pretty shocking that number, you know, 17% of all infant deaths reported in VARs occur the day of vaccination, and 78% within a week. That is truly horrific. Amazing. If it was smoking, if it was other type of things, I picked up on a story the other day where an airdrop or nose drop was banned because of one reported death, banned straight away, and yet we have such contempt for our children. So, Michelle, it's a very interesting topic. We're going to have to take a short break now. This is TNT Radio.
How can we survive? The Prime Minister of New Zealand, who once declared she was the single source of truth on COVID, is resigning.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
New Zealand Prime Minister Ardern has resigned from office and left as fallout from the COVID lockdowns continues.
Dismiss anything else. We will continue to be your single source of truth. We will provide information frequently. We will share everything we can.
Can New Zealand survive now that the Prime Minister, who was the, quote, single source of truth for the country, is gone? Jacinda Ardern was the face of fascism. She was the face of COVID authoritarianism. She was the face of corporate government collusion violating free speech rights. Good riddance to Prime Minister Ardern. Maybe New Zealand can recover from the madness of COVID. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
A social credit system was introduced in China in 2014. China's social credit system is a nationwide government program for regulation of citizens' behavior based on a point system. Under this system, citizens are assessed using data collected from court documents, government or corporate records, and even from neighbors and observers. Citizens with higher scores are eligible for bank loans, free medical checkups, and other services in demand. Points are deducted for traffic violations, defaulting on loan payments, smoking in non-smoking zones, buying or playing too many video games, posting false news stories online, and other transgressions deemed appropriate by authorities. Citizens with bad social credit scores can be denied essential services, and blacklists are available for employers, educational institutions, and credit providers to reference. When introduced by China's State Council, it was announced the system would favor the trustworthy to roam everywhere under heaven, while making it hard for the discredited to take a single step.
Hear about it.
I don't understand the American people.
Talk about it.
I shouldn't have to just swallow what you're giving me.
On today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Dr. Michelle Purrow, esteemed pediatrician. We've got on to the topic of talking about children's health. I'm coming from this as a former school teacher. And what I've noticed during the pandemic issue is that a lot of schools became sites for installing 5G towers. And I'm greatly concerned by the evidence of independent researchers putting forward claims that 5G is linked to illnesses. And we've had on the show many good guests, qualified guests, talking about the dangers of EMF, electromagnetic frequencies, on health. And I'd like to get your take on this. EMF, electromagnetic radiation, do you think it's really an impact on our health or not?
I most certainly do. And as a matter of fact, the new MDs, we're going to be discussing this next month in depth. Zen Honeycutt, Stephanie Seneff, and I feel that 4G wasn't so great, by the way, and this and the 5G and the frequent cell towers, this ionizing radiation is awful for children. The problems are it's ubiquitous. They popped up in communities everywhere. And the symptoms from it are often vague. which makes it very difficult to pinpoint to the electromagnetic frequencies. You know, kids can just feel off or fatigued or headachy or maybe not sleeping well. And it's attributed to every other thing, stress, not eating well, a fight with mom or whatever, other than to electromagnetic frequencies. We have talk about blindness. You know, we talked about our willingness to just accept the vaccination schedules. We also have a willingness just to believe everything that you really, that, you know, the telecom industry is putting on us with the electromagnetic frequencies. So they have been as corrupt as the big ag, tobacco, pharmaceuticals. They've been equally horrific, and just their studies are awful. And so we've got a big problem with it. And here in California, they put up a 5G in a little town called Rincon, California. And within I believe it was 2 years of putting it up, three teachers and two students came down with blood cancers. I believe they were leukemias, but don't quote me on that, but blood cancer. So, and their parents got the school to take it down. It was the parents' outrage that got the school to take it down. But the only way to we can stop this is through small communities. This is where being in towns and communities can vote out the ability for the telecom industry to take hold. Because once they get a pass, they can put in these towers anywhere and everywhere. And those fast frequencies are really toxic, particularly to small children and pregnancy. So I know there's going to be a massive outcry to people to switch to getting hardwired or fiber optics. But if I have a kid with any kind of chronic illness, I tell the parents, at the least, shut off the router at night. And in the most, hardwire a house or get fiber optics. But you can still do hardwiring and just get rid of it. However, if you've got a 5G on your apartment building or right outside your house and you rent your apartment, there's no hope. I mean, I would literally say you have to move. It's very hard to shield from it. There are things you can do, but it's not easy.
Yeah. Joe Olson, Joe Posma, we've discussed this issue before. I mean, again, would you want to just summarize your take on this?
Oh, yes. I recommend an article that I wrote as a prelim for an interview at Coast to Coast AM back in 2021, and it's called The Body Electric Secrets, based on a book by Robert O. Becker. And the body operates on DC currents that are millivolt and milliamp. And so that's what your P-R signal is with your EKG. It's your brain sending a little signal to your muscle. It's your muscle sending another signal back to the Q part, is sending a signal back. The Q note, S note, is sending a signal back to the brain saying, okay, well, the ventricle's full. And the brain says, okay, well, then send it to the atrium. So the article. Anyhow, bottom line is, yeah, it's the amount of radiation that we're receiving from all sources, which is the dirty electricity as well as the electromagnetic, and it's ubiquitous. I mean, back in World War II, naval radar could pick up a 20-man life raft 20 miles away if there wasn't a thunderstorm between it. Now we've got Doppler radar that can pick up individual raindrops and hailstones. So bottom line is we're bathed in more electromagnetic radiation from all sources, and that's your radar, your radios, the 5G. It's just an absolute electronic soup, and all of it has negative biological effects. So it's just a matter of figuring out how to individually reduce it in your own environment, like she said. But you know, do not put a Wi-Fi router in your house for anything. Do not get anything that's connected remotely. Don't get rid of your optical mouse unless it's wired. You know, some of that stuff you can do and reduce your internal exposure. But yeah, we need to address that subject. And the FCC is totally captured by the same group that has captured every other one of the three-letter agencies.
Yeah, everything is captured. None of the regulation agencies are doing anything to protect anybody. They're just in it for the money. They're paid off. It's all just a scam. As far as the EMF thing, electromagnetic frequency radiation that we're all impinged with now, I think that's one reason why people enjoy camping so much. You get out into the forest, into the mountains, and you just feel freer. You just feel like there's a weight off you or something. And people have, you know, said that's actually connected to the electromagnetic smog that you feel in the city. You get away from it. Other people report, and I agree with this too, like if you have a power outage, you know, sometimes a power just goes out, the the power utility does something and, you know, it goes out. You can almost feel it. You almost feel like a sense of, I don't know what it is. It's hard to describe. I don't know if you guys have that experience as well. But, you know, we've had the power go off here the last a few times and you just sort of feel a release. I don't know what it is. Is that a real thing, Michelle?
It absolutely is a real thing because remember, we're all electromagnetic frequencies ourselves. We're just energy and inside of this little body. So we just work on ion exchanges. That's how our body actually works. And so what you may feel, and sometimes it's really hard to pinpoint, you're absolutely right, Joe. You go out and you're in a free of electrosmog. Your electromagnetic frequencies are communicating better. And you're able to connect to nature, to source more powerfully. And I think people do feel recharged in nature, in trees, receiving those electrons, grounding. You've heard of that. You've heard of electron bathing, walking in the woods, going into the ocean, another great source of recharging. I do believe that if we don't get out of this electrosmog, I like the term, that we're going to have to start taking, you know, doing kind of regrounding regularly. And grounding ourselves because of the toxicity from the frequencies. So, you know, this is a huge topic. And I don't want to give it such a small, like, little time. And one day maybe we should revisit it on this show. But I think that getting out in nature may become one of those things for exercising, like we were talking about, detoxing, to kind of put yourself back in electrostatic harmony, so to speak. That may be a thing.
Yeah, one thing I do with my daughter that's just fun when we go out gardening in springtime, you know, all summer and harvest season, is that even if we're outside doing something with shoes on, I say we only go in the garden in bare feet. We have to do it so that we can ground it with our bare feet in the dirt in the garden.
No, it's wonderful. It sounds like so simple, right? It's like, oh, really? Yeah, really. Go barefoot. Run in the ocean, go hug a tree. It's, you know, sounds like so crunchy old hippie, but it's actually true. And trees are a huge source of electronic recharge for us. So I tell folks, you know, when people say, wow, I was in the redwoods, it was magical. I felt so good. Yeah, it's right. And that's what I was saying. There's some of these symptoms from electromagnetic frequencies are vague. You know, they're not hardcore. You just don't feel right. You know, it's hard to put your finger on. And that's why they're so hard to diagnose. But this issue is now identified in Western mainstream medicine. There are now insurance codes, those ICD-10s I referred to prior, for electromagnetic frequency sickness. So it's a known thing. And now we can diagnose it officially and bill insurance for it.
Yes, good point. And we ran an article on PSI, Principia Scientific International, back in March 2020, where the title of the article was 5G Warning by the Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers. And at that time, they were quite concerned about the effects of 5G and were warning against the rollout. And the IEEE has 420,000 members in 160 countries. And they published a study called Clear Evidence of Cell Phone RF Radiation Cancer Risk. And that report, not very appealing to the industries, because obviously 5G industries, smartphones, you know, and so forth, we want the earbuds in, don't we? We want all the convenience of all that. We want the smart meters. We want all these things that are so convenient. However, the pollution, the dangers from this electrosmog, as you call it, quite rightly, it's invisible. We can't see it, but it's there. And even the World Health Organization's International Agency for Research on Cancer, the IARC, again at that time in 2020, they conceded that exposure to 5G would be, and I quote, possibly carcinogenic to humans, unquote. So again, the evidence was in then, but very little is done in the media to report this. Very few studies, if any, are being done. And again, it's follow the money. It's big business. We want the convenience. And I think Dr. Nisa Khan made the comparison. She said that the dangers of 5G are very comparable to those of smoking, passive smoking, where the more exposure you have, the higher the risk, and it will be carcinogenic. And, you know, it's something for us to think about, and I don't think we're doing enough. We've got to do more on this subject and raise the alarm, because tiredness, fatigue is one of the symptoms of long exposure to EMF. And I'm sure, Joe Olson, you could add a bit more to that.
Yeah, well, it's we were really fortunate today. We had blue skies and we only had 3 or 4 chemtrails here in Houston today. So that was absolutely wonderful. Yeah, it's a multi-threat vector. And what we're dealing with is the four horsemen of the apocalypse, which is disease, pestilence, famine, and war. And the Bible, some people have translated the war to be actually death. Death is inevitable. War is something that's calculated. And so these people have control of all of those threat vectors, but it looks like that the threat vectors are all falling apart. You know, we're decoding the pestilence of 5G and GMO and pesticides. We're decoding the diseases that they're creating and inflicting on us. And we're going to be able to solve the famine problem because the 0.33% of nitrous oxide that's in the air is a natural result of lightning breaking apart the 78% of the atmosphere that's nitrogen, which mixes with the water, which provides nutrients for plants, which is reason why the Dutch farmers are not creating a biological problem. They're solving a biological problem. And so we're going to have to overthrow that tyranny. And then the next one is war. And every one of the wars, great video by a guy named Mark Romano at What Really Happened is called All Wars Are Bankers Wars. And it's 45 minutes long. It sets it up where you can absolutely see how they stage set absolutely everything. And it looks like Russia has been able to set up a complete independent economy so that they were not affected by the sanctions. Their ruble has increased in value. Their trade's increased. They produce commodities that the world needs, frangible products that you have to have in order to have a functioning society. And Europe is facing a very bleak future if they don't reconcile with their terrible leadership that they've got. And we need to completely dissolve NATO. We didn't need to invade Bosnia, Syria, Afghanistan, Libya. All of those were NATO operations. And this is just the last NATO operation before that particular death threat is taken away from humanity. So good times ahead, kids.
Thanks, Joe. Michelle, we want to end on a high if we can. Last couple of minutes to go in the show. You know, we talked about the good news. There is good news coming. You know, people are making efforts. Is there anything we've not yet mentioned? Do you want to get over to listeners?
Yeah, so I would have to say that remember that the people have the inherent ability to take care of themselves. Their body has an innate ability to heal itself. So we just have to give it the nutrients and the tools it needs to take care of itself, and it will. So, you know, we don't have an absence of ADHD drugs or vaccines or anything else in our bodies or Tylenol, anything else that, you know, and this is sort of the basis of healing. And just because something is basic doesn't mean that it's not viable, that it's not important. You know, everybody wants a sophisticated computer, you know, generated IT related, you know, ways to manage life now. And so I say it's not better living through technology. So that's the first thing I would tell folks is that because it's high tech doesn't mean it's better. And the thing that you kind of were touching on before, John, I would say that there is a high cost of convenience. That, yes, it is more convenient to call for takeout through DoorDash or all these other companies out now. It absolutely makes life easier. But what is it that's taking up so much of our time that we no longer have time to do the basics, like preparing our food or growing our food? Is where are we spending our time? And I just wonder how much is spent on social media. People spend a lot of time in Twitterdom and Facebookdom or Insta. Everyone's flipping through. I mean, I was on a train once and everything's flipping. Everyone, I could see people just scrolling. I said, are they all on social media? So if we were to take away some of those time sucks where people are investing a lot of time, would we free up time to take care of ourselves in a more holistic way? So I pose that question to our audience. I believe we can, and that we have become victim to the beast, the IT beast. And this is how they'll get us. So I'd say get off your computers, close down your screens, don't carry your phone everywhere you go. We survived years without the phone. Put the phone down and then let's see how we do. We don't need a smartwatch, an Apple Watch or whatever to see how we sleep or how we breathe or how we think. So I'd say remove the tentacles that the IT has created within ourselves and see if we can live more holistically. That would be my advice, John.
That's good advice, Michelle. And I'd like to add to that, that it's the same argument that we've been putting forward for many years with the health industry. You go to the gym, be healthy, you take it upon yourself. Don't expect other people to do it for you. You know, if you brush your teeth twice a day, if you go to the gym two or three times a week, get out for a walk, get out in the sunshine, try and cook your own meals now and again. It's these are little things you can do, but over time it does build up, doesn't it? It's incremental, and we all have the option to do that. And I think the important thing is it's free will, not by government diktat. And I think that's the great thing about it. And if only we had this during the pandemic, you know, give us the advice, give us the recommendations, sure. But allow us as individuals to make our own decisions. And I think we've got to get back to that, haven't we, more? And I'd like to emphasize that what you're doing is great. It's self-directed learning. It's take the responsibility yourself. You know, don't expect other people to spoon feed you, you know, with everything. And if you follow that simple maxim, then you can't go too far wrong. Michelle Perrot, it's been such a pleasure having you on Sky Dragon Slang. We definitely want you back again. Hopefully that won't be too far in the future. But again, it's been a wonderful show, and thank you very much, and we wish you well. So Dr. Michelle Perrot, thank you again for being on Sky Dragon Slang.
My pleasure. Thank you, John, Jojo. Delighted to be
here.
Thank
you. Thank you, Michelle.
Sweet dreams.